but I feel like guys maybe in their 40s, 50s and up, my age and up, I just don't feel like pastors especially feel like they can even acknowledge, hey, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
And I remember that moment, my wife asking me, hey, are you okay?
Everybody, Doc Brian here, and welcome to Doc Talks, where we talk about people's troubles, trials, tribulations, and hopefully triumphs in life today. We're in LifeWord Studios in Conway, Arkansas, broadcasting to 127 countries and over 150 languages to a potential listening audience of 2 billion people. You can find all of our content at lifeword.org. Today, I have a guest with me, Jake Norman. You may notice him. I'm sure most people know who you are. You just have one of those faces that you see, you know, hung up on a poster in the
post office.
Yeah. So, Jake, it's good to have you with us here today.
Glad to be here.
So, of course, Doc Talks is a mental health show. And I think that a lot of times, particularly as a pastor's, we see that mental health isn't something that's talked about a lot within the church. In your experience, as being a pastor now for however many years, and I know you were a church planner at one time, how do we approach that subject scripturally?
I mean, I think some of the challenges when I think of scripturally, it tells us to confess into one another, to have kind of this accountability relationship with other pastors, support. But I think as pastors, we struggle with applying that to ourselves. What does it look like for me to open up and share my hurt, my struggles with a fellow pastor, with a fellow brother in Christ? What does that look like? So, I mean, I know in my own journey, 27 years, 26 years, I've struggled with that. You know, who can I talk to? Who should I talk to? What can I share? Can't I share? It's always been a struggle just because I know the Bible says we ought to. And yet, how can I as a pastor do that?
Yeah. And, you know, there was a recent study from Pew Research that said that most pastors don't even feel safe in their own pulpits to be able to convey the issues that they have, whether it be, you know, a mental health issue or a finance issue or a health issue, that they don't feel safe, that they're under, you know, a microscope of how they're living their life. Have you ever felt like that in ministry?
You know, I definitely have probably felt the pressure, the microscope part. I'm thinking as you say that, when I was church planting, I preached a sermon, and I was, and this has been over 10 years ago, and I still remember this happening. We had a first-time guest, a husband that came with his wife for the first time, and I, during my sermon, shared a very personal struggle and kind of how I was addressing that, how I was working on that, and he never came back again. And we, my wife kind of asked his wife why, and he said, she said that me getting that open about it actually made him uncomfortable. So I think even that made me kind of consider, okay, was I too open? Was, and so I think that's part of the tension for me is where is too much sharing, where is not enough sharing, and then also maybe not just the what I'm talking about, but who I'm talking to. And I think maybe as a pastor, that's been the microscope part. It makes me think of the who part, because I may not feel comfortable sharing here or with this person, but then who I need to share with someone. And so I think that's maybe the struggle with the microscope is who, but then also maybe in what context.
You know, sometimes it is, hey, I'm having this situation, and whether you're talking to your deacons or whomever, people that you feel like you can trust. And I hate to say this, but we're just going to be honest, is that as pastors, sometimes the people in your church who you think you can trust aren't the people that you need to be talking to. And so how do we find the person or the people that we can just be transparent with?
You know, we were just talking about this in a men's group at our church. I think some things that came out in that conversation is one, probably to get there, we're going to have to find some people we've spent some time with. Two, maybe in that course of time, we share some things that are not, they're below the surface. You know, there's this stuff that is real, and we find that person someone we can trust. They're not going to go share it, weaponize it against us as leaders. I saw time and just, I think, observing someone and can they be trusted? Have they proven that they can be trusted and not go And I think there's a difference between people that intentionally go misuse that information versus they didn't intend to.
Sure.
But they just, it over the course of time can happen. So I would say time, maybe trust, and I think setting clear expectations. If you're going to form that kind of relationship, I do think of one group of guys. We had three men in one of the churches I pastored, and we met, and we dealt with the real stuff of life to very personal levels. But it was very clearly stated in the front end, like, hey, if you violate these terms, you probably will not be a part of this anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, unless we decide otherwise.
Yeah.
So we were just really clear on expectations.
Yeah, I'm a part of a men's group here in Conway, and none of those men are members of any Baptist church. I mean, some of them aren't even Christians, you know, but we kind of had the code, and there's four or five federal agents.
Mm.
And I mean, they literally say, if anything is said, we'll ruin you. You know, we will dig a deep, deep hole.
Yeah.
And there is that level of camaraderie, but also to know that hey, they've kicked people out for even letting the wife access the group me by accident, because that is not. Now, when my group me goes off, my wife is like, what are they saying? Well, I can't tell you. Well, why can't you? Well, it's a secret. You know, it's not a secret, but this is our thing where men are pouring their hearts out because of any type of situation. But I have found as a pastor, it has been most helpful to have a group of men, some who aren't even Christians, to be able to say, hey, this is where I struggle. And a lot of these men have started going to church because they find out that the pastor is a real human being. And we struggle with the same things that everybody else struggles with.
Yep.
And it would be wonderful if we had churches that had that same kind of mentality that, hey, your pastor is just a regular person who deals with the troubles and heartaches of life. We see, and I'm sure you have seen or read that pastors now are committing suicide at an astronomical rate. The pressures of life, the pressures of ministry, the pressures of family. How do we coexist in all of those things and stay healthy?
Yeah, when I go back to the Bible verses, confess your sins to one another, and through that you find healing. I think maybe, at least my framework when I grew up and I heard that verse the first time, like in my mind, the picture was, you know, what is this saying? I'm supposed to be called up in front of the whole church every Sunday and confess all my sins. I don't think that's the context of that verse. What I think it does mean is we find what you're talking about, two or three pastors, whether it's pastors, brothers in our church, I don't know where people feel comfortable with their own personal walk, but find someone, maybe it's two or three, and be willing to go to that place of confess my sins. Like, here's where I struggle. Here's real life. It's not the painted over version, the veneer. It's this is the real stuff. Because for me, I know in the group I mentioned, we had three of us, and I remember the day there was the youngest guy in the group. He just let it out, something that he was really struggling with, and it was real and it was raw, and just weeping. And interestingly, he was the youngest in the group of us three. And when he did, the other two of us said, we struggle with the same thing. And then together, through his being willing to confess that, all three of us actually together became stronger and won some victory over it. We found, as the verse said, we actually found healing from it. But it took, ironically, the youngest guy in the group stepping up and going into that vulnerable spot and taking some risk.
Yeah.
And I think that's the struggle maybe for myself or any pastor, because we feel like we can't have that struggle, you know, that somehow we're beyond that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or we're supposed to be sanctified to a level where we don't have that struggle.
Yeah.
Although I have revealed things in my men's group and said, I'm sure you don't want to hear a pastor has this kind of trouble or is dealing with these sort of things. And I've had many of them say, I would rather go to a church where a pastor was transparent than to where they put on, you know, some kind of persona, what we call a poser, you know, in the pulpit and just live this life that's not genuine.
Yep.
If we're going to be disciple makers, we have to be genuine people. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to understand that we have troubles, that we have these situations that happen. Yep. Dennis Swanberg wrote a book. I don't know if you've read it. It's called The Man Code. Mm-mm. And so The Man Code, the first number is one.
Okay.
As a man, as a pastor, you have to have a one-on-one relationship with Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. The second number is three. Jesus had Peter, James, and John. Yep. We have to have three people that we can dump on and that they're going to take it to the grave.
Yeah.
You know, then you have 12. You need 12 friends. You need a group of people, whether it be family, that you do stuff with, that you do mm-hmm. life with. As Jesus had the 12 disciples, we have to have that community. And then there's 3,000. We have to have the church. You know, you have to be involved in the local church. And what I have found is that men who follow that code, they don't live perfect lives. You know, they're not righteous beyond what any normal person would be, but their coping skills are a lot better. Mm. Now, I think you will agree with this. Pastors lack community.
I feel like men, we just talked about this in the men's group we have at our church. I think men in general struggle with community.
Yeah.
Like I watch my wife, she is great at it. And I don't know if that's a my wife thing or most mm-hmm. women thing, but I watch her and then I watch me and my like guys I know. Mm-hmm. Women will be much quicker to open up and talk and create community, whereas the men are always kind of at arm's length, I feel like.
Yeah. And why do you think that is?
I mean, I feel like maybe just men overall, pastors maybe especially, feel, again, there's – well, I think maybe some generational things, depending on what generation they're in. Hey, men don't cry. Men suck it up. Men, you know, whatever. And even a comparison thing of, well, why are you so out of shape about that? I mean, I went through this. Mm-hmm. And so we think their pain is less than. I don't know all the comparison traps we get into. And we're afraid, I think, as men to be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that as a man going to another man that needs help, that you need help, you're going to get one of three responses. I don't know how to help you, or here's a book or podcast to listen to, or that's not bad, listen to this. Mm. And then they tell their own. I think one of the biggest problems we have, not just in the church, but in America today, is that people don't listen to understand. They listen to respond.
Mm.
And we have to be, as the Bible says, slow to speak, you know, slow to anger. And how would let's just think of I don't want to say think of your church at Willow Beach, but let's just think of any church. How would it be different if everybody was listening to understand?
I think probably for me, because this is something I'm not naturally. I mean, as a pastor, I'm part of my job is talking.
Right.
We'd probably pause a lot more. There'd be a lot more silence, which we consider pretty awkward a lot of times in conversation. Yeah. Maybe a lot more compassion, because I think when you ask a question and invite the conversation and listen, maybe you can, even if you can't relate, you can hear the story behind the pain or behind the thing without talking to fix it. And I'm a fixer, so it is something I have to work on. So I think maybe a little more compassion, a lot more pause and space for people. And I think as men, I mean, even thinking back to what you said previously, I don't know if this is a me thing again or an all men thing. No one taught me how to really process emotions. So if you as a man come unloading emotional things on me, I mean, my wife and I even have this conversation. She's very emotional. It speaks from the heart a lot, and it for me, it's almost overwhelming. I don't know what to do with it sometimes.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I think men just feel ill-equipped, so there's this awkward silence of, I've listened, now what do? I feel like I need to fix something. It's what I do. You've shared this, I've listened, but what I do, I need. Sometimes I think I struggle with, I don't have to actually fix it even.
Yeah. Yeah,
you just needed to share something, and I struggle with, I want to fix it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have my three close friends, and there was one particular Sunday night where not anything bad, but you know how somebody will say something just rubs you the wrong way in church, and then you start feeling inadequate. You know, at least for me, I let things marinate in, you know, after I'm not that kind of person to just brush it off. And so I just, like, felt this darkness, you know, that just came over me and was like, I'm worthless. Like, you know, just the all the lies just came in. So I called my best friend, and he didn't answer because he goes to bed at 8:30 every single night. And I called his wife, and she didn't answer. And so then I went to my number two, and his response was, "Have you felt this way before? And what did you do when you felt this way before?" And I was like, "I don't need a therapist. You know, I need somebody to listen." Yeah. And then my third friend, because I was like, "Dude, I don't need a therapist." And, you know, so then my third friend was like, "I'm coming to you. Where are you?" Mm. And I was like, "I don't need you to come to me. I just need you to listen." And I think that a lot of times, even in that simple three category, that's one of the three things we're going to get when you say, "Hey, I need help," is you're going to have somebody that comes to you. You're going to have somebody that has all the answers, and you're going to have somebody that just doesn't show up. Mm. And the worst thing that we can do, not just as pastors, but as men, is to not show up. Mm. We need to be present. We need to have hearts that are willing to receive what's being told to us. And I would like to think, but we know it's not true, not all pastors are that way. Mm. So how do we as pastors shepherd our church better by being present?
Mm. I'm thinking of different size churches I've served in, because I've served in churches that had 12 people when I first got there to churches of a few hundred.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that looks a little different in each context. But I think if you're in the larger church, you may not be able to shepherd and be present for everybody. I meant at a more than a surface level. But certainly you could look, and like you mentioned, the number 12, find a smaller group within that church where you say, "Hey, I'm going to be present for this group."
Yeah.
And then, but then maybe as you're present for that group, like Jesus's model, you raise up other people that can help be present for others in the church, so that maybe the whole church, if you're in a church of 200 or 300, doesn't have access to this one person at that level, but they have access to somebody somewhere within their church family that they can be present. But I think modeling it too, you know, as a pastor, again, it gets delicate. There's all sorts of how do we do this right, and where is too much and where is not enough. I don't have all those answers, but I think modeling it maybe helps.
Yeah. And, you know, some of the biggest trouble I've ever been in as a pastor is that I either didn't show up or I showed up too much. You know, I've had old ladies that, I shouldn't say old ladies, but you know what I mean. Older women who you didn't come to the hospital enough, and then gone to the hospital of older men who I literally had a trustee say, "Not today, preacher. You need to just go back home," while he's in the hospital dying. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, you know. And so I think for pastors, part of the struggle is to know where that is. Where is that line? How do we serve these people? Because there's not a, you know, there's not a handbook that says this is what you do. But it just doesn't seem like, and I'll say this from personal experience, and it may have changed, but sometimes it feels like when I reach out to other pastors, it's, well, we have the same situation, we have the same problem, or it feels like there's almost a community of competition, that, hey, I'm over here trying to do the best that I can, you know, I can't help you with your trouble. So how do we as pastors open up the space for other pastors?
Mm. Well, and I mean, I do think it's important within our church family maybe to model some things, but I also think for pastors, it might be really helpful to look to two or three other pastors that maybe we don't feel like we can go to some places with people in our own body, but surely we can find two or three brothers in Christ that are pastoring. I feel like in that space, we could learn to relate to each other. How? That's a challenging question, because I think even we talk about like how it could be misused in our own church family. If we're in the same locale, for example, I think some pastors are afraid, what if I tell the guy down the street or across town and then he somehow misuses that information? Again, I think time and trust. I'm probably at the point in my life where I desired, I'm not real good at this naturally. It takes concerted effort. I tend to personally keep people at arm's length, just by nature. So I have to really work at trying to build these relationships.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I think time, trust, but then also I think it just at some point for me, I just go, hey, I know I need this and I've got to figure it out. I've got to form it and I've got to reach out and find the guys that are willing.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where you start. I mean, what is it? Paul tells Timothy, go find faithful men. Mm-hmm. Maybe you find some guys that they're just willing. Maybe they're not the guys that you thought, but they're the guys that are willing. Yeah. You start there.
Yeah. There was a several years ago now, there was a pastor in North Little Rock, not a BMA church, but a rather large congregation. And he stood before his church and he confessed that he had an addiction to pornography. And the church loved him through that. He remained their pastor. The church paid for him to go to counseling, paid for him and his wife to have marital counseling until he was restored to the point of where he was sober. There were people that came to me and said, can you believe they allowed him to continue to be their pastor? And there was that air of judgment, even when there was confession that the Bible calls for. How do we navigate those situations? Because that is, you know, we've confessed before man. He believed that he needed to tell the church. That's what he felt like God had led him to do. He left it in the church's hands of whether they fired him or not. But then other people from the outside looking in are being judgmental, saying, I wouldn't want a pastor who had a porn problem. Well, I hate to tell them, but there's a lot of pastors that have porn problems that are behind pulpits every Sunday that are struggling with those things. So how do we combat the thought of other people projecting onto other pastors of, I wouldn't want that, I wouldn't want this?
You know, I've talked about this with people before. I think as you dive into some of the stories of the Bible, we think of Judas, right? Like he's infamous and famous as the one who betrays Jesus. But really, in my mind, Judas and Peter aren't that different.
Right.
The outcome's different, certainly. But Peter denied knowing who Jesus was, not once, not twice, but three times.
Yeah.
And I've asked people, I said, what if Peter was the pastor of your church today? He would be fired and probably not allowed back for some time, or ever, maybe. But what we see is Jesus brings Peter back and restores him to a prominent position of leadership in a relatively short amount of time, from our perspective. So I don't know what all the right answers are. I've often said if I went and finished my master's or some kind of higher education, that might be an interest of what does that path look like forward to restoration? I do think that's maybe, and this is just, I guess, Jake's theological opinion on plurality of elder leadership in a church, because that does give some space. If you've got a guy who's struggling and says, hey, I am struggling and wrestling through something, I just need to take a step back. Well, if you've got a plurality of leadership in some way, someone else in that group can step forward and carry that mantle maybe for a little bit and give this person some space. But yeah, I've struggled. I've often, I guess more recently, asked myself how come it is that we don't, like if we had been the church in Peter's day, Peter might've been fired permanently. But Jesus restores them, you know? So I don't know what all the right answers are there and how we show truth and grace as Jesus did, where we're full of truth and full of grace, but we certainly could do better at that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've often said we're just one decision from being just as bad as that other person is.
Yeah.
And if we truly love our neighbor as ourself, which doesn't mean that we think less of ourselves, it just means we think more of the other than we do of ourselves, then grace should flow from us like anything, you know, that we give grace wherever. Now, I understand that there may be a time of sin that somebody needs to step away from the ministry. But then how do you step back into that role without being the black sheep of the community? You know, what is that process? And I think it's unique to every situation. You know, I used to be very dogmatic about a pastor cannot be divorced until I've met some of our pastors who have been divorced, but it was a situation that was unique. You know, it was something that was beyond their control. And I've seen pastors who've had those situations that was beyond their control that left the pastorate and said, I can't. And others who have flourished because of grace. And so I think that we have to be very careful to pass judgment at all to begin with, but to pass judgment when we don't know the whole story is something that can lead, you know, us down to this road of destruction. And a lot of people need to realize too that most of us pastors are just like them. We're one paycheck from being homeless, you know, and this is our job.
Yep.
This is what we do. And so there's that extra pressure on the pastor that comes with that as well. So from a pastor's perspective, how can church members be better church members to serve their pastor?
I mean, I think something you just said sticks out of my mind, and I think each church, it's just kind of culture is unique, but understand the pastor is a person, just like everyone else in the body.
Yeah.
We may have a different calling as far as how we serve in the body, but we're still people. And I think everyone knows that we're sinners saved by grace, just like anyone else there. But actually acknowledging that, you know, you look at that elder, I've been doing a lot of kind of elder pastor qualification. We've been doing a study on that actually on Wednesday nights. And something I heard someone say was a pastor, when you look at that list of qualifications, other than two things, able to teach and not a recent convert, they're just called to be what every believer ought to be.
Right.
So really there's only two things that are unique. And that being said, looking at that list, understanding that we're human, just like everyone else, and we need the brotherhood, the support of our family. We need accountability. We need transparency. We need to be able to be people,
right?
And not that we're trying to fail or we're trying to fall, but we certainly need grace, just like them. And you know, you know as well as I do, you pastor,
yeah.
You've got a microphone in front of you, so we. Everything we say gets scrutinized in a different way.
Yeah.
And we're certainly apt to say something we wished we hadn't some days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And nowadays it gets put all over the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. I have many times gone back on a Sunday night and redacted something that I said Sunday morning and said, hey, I said this, but what I meant was this. One of my deacons made this statement one time, and it was probably one of the most profound statements I've ever heard. And I think the church members need to realize the pastor is the only person who's a member of the church that doesn't have a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And if we realize that as church members, does that make us look at our pastor differently?
Mm-hmm.
And if it does, then we're not doing the right thing to start with. You know, that he is a member of the church too. His family are members of the church too, but he doesn't have a pastor. So kind of putting all this in context, and I know that younger pastors that have just been in the ministry for a few years probably feel this impact the most, but there are some older pastors that are really struggling, you know, with mental health and where am I? I think I can say I had a pastor reach out to me the other day that was 80 years old and said, I feel like I've not been successful in ministry. And I have wasted the time of the church. And just everything was, it was such a lie that the devil had placed upon him. But just saying it out loud, you know, made it real.
Mm-hmm.
And we have men in the ministry who the devil have convinced them of these things. So as a pastor, as somebody who's been in the thick of this, what is your words of advice to other pastors?
I think one, I reflect back on I call it my Jonah moment, where frankly I got to the point kind of during the back end of COVID, my prayers to God was, God, if I can do anything but pastoring, I would love to do that. And I went and ran a real estate office, did not do ministry as part of a church. But I think at some point the first step was just admit I'm not okay right now. Learn to do that and say, and just say, I'm not okay, and acknowledge that. And then once you acknowledge that, right, then maybe you can start to see, hey, I need this. And maybe it's just a group of men and go form that, start with one. From there, maybe there's things where there is some deeper stuff you need to work through, whether it's through counseling, therapy, something. But I think for a lot of pastors, especially maybe, like you mentioned, I think the younger generation, it's weird that I feel like I can say younger generation at this point in my life, but you know, those in their 20s maybe, and maybe even 30s, they feel more comfortable talking about this stuff. But I feel like guys maybe in their 40s, 50s and up, my age and up, I just don't feel like pastors especially feel like they can even acknowledge, hey, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
And I remember that moment, my wife asking me, hey, are you okay? And I said, no, but I can't tell you what's wrong. I just know I'm not okay. Mm-hmm. But I think that moment at least was a part where I could start figuring it out.
Yeah.
And so I think as a pastor, maybe that's step one. If you just admit it, start looking, even if it's just one person to open up with. And then from there, maybe if there's some deep stuff that you start kind of feeling like you need to work out, contact someone. Yeah.
And it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah.
That you know, we all have struggles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like to say every Monday morning, I'm ready to quit. You know, that's just part of being in the pastorate, I think. It's a struggle. While we have a unique set of skills, we have a unique set of problems.
Yep.
And it's okay to not be okay.
Yep.
So even in other addictions, the first step is admitting you have a problem.
Yep.
You know, so Jake, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Yeah, enjoyed it.
If you had one message, just one thing to give pastors, what would it be?
I think what we just talked about, just be willing with whoever you're comfortable with to just acknowledge when that moment comes or that season comes that you're not okay. Mm-hmm. To go, hey, this is not good. I'm not okay. Because that's the first step to figuring some other parts out. Yeah. And for me, it took a while. That moment from I'm not okay to kind of back on track was about 6 to 10 months.
Yeah.
But it took that first step to get to over here.
So good. Absolutely. Thank you for listening today. Jake, again, thank you for being here with us. Of course, I'm Doc Brian. You can find me at thedocbrian.com. We're on LifeWord. Follow all of our content at lifeword.org. Thank you for being here today and listening. We'll see you soon. Goodbye.